The source of energy in a biofuel is carbon right out of the atmosphere. We're growing the stuff. And so it means that we're not adding any carbon to the atmosphere. We're simply recycling what's there. You grow plant matter, you ferment it into your fuel or process it into diesel, and you burn it, and it ends up right back where it started. So biofuels are a really nice situation. The only issue is the cost it takes to farm, process, haul the material. And in many cases, it really isn't economically feasible unless you're growing an extremely high-energy fuel, that, and particularly one that has nothing to do with the food market. You may remember the United Nations called for a 5-year moratorium on biofuels after we had that corn to ethanol problem here in this country about a year and a half ago. And when the use of corn for generating ethanol, biofuel, drove the price of corn for food up to the point that nobody could afford to eat, for instance, Mexico, the cost of corn was outrageous and many people went hungry. But what they didn't know was the corn that was used to produce the ethanol was cattle feed grade, not human food grade.
Now, you know, with algae, what about that?
Algae is a wonderful source of fuel. It is one of the most efficient growing machines on Earth. It can trap sunlight and turn it into biomass at an incredible rate. The issues you run into with algae are, number one, you need to feed it CO2, and so you probably would want to be located near one of those CO2 wells that brings water up that's loaded with this stuff, or you'd want to be near a coal-fired plant to consume their exhaust. The other issue is growing algae requires very specific temperatures and conditions and food in the water for the algae, like phosphates. In a successful algae growing operation, you also run into having the right breed. You know that people who ferment wine or beer have specific types of yeast that they have developed
yes.
for their specific product, and it's a closely, jealously guarded secret. You can imagine that in the algae biofuel business, the same situation will spring up, where people will test and grow and breed the right algae for their product that works well in their situation. That's one of the things that's coming soon. The people who will make a lot of the money at the outset will be those who stock and breed different types of algae. Now, the issue with algae fuel or algae-derived fuel is how do you filter microscopic particles out efficiently without using up a lot of filter material? And so one of the things that's slowing down the development of algae fuels is how to get the algae out of the solution effectively so that it's a material that you can process to the next stage. And it's very difficult to do. Filtration generally doesn't work as well as, for instance, a centrifuge. And centrifuges are energy hogs and they're big. So there are developments coming along, such as using ultrasound to stick the particles of algae together and have them drop out of the solution. They're working on that. That's a big issue.
Can they generate enough fuel to do that?
Well, yes, they could. Algae farming could become one of the things that actually changes our landscape. One of the issues with algae farming is you've got to have water and lots of it. So this is the sort of thing that's going to happen in an area where you've got plenty of water to work with. Algae can easily generate enough energy because, again, it's a very efficient process means of converting sunlight, raw energy, into a biofuel. But the amount of land that it will take will literally change our landscape if we go to an algae-based fuel production system. Imagine how the breadbasket looks in the U.S. and all the farming done in areas like Central and South Florida and across Kansas where the wheat fields are. Imagine now an area the size of a state where we're growing nothing but algae, but it would be scattered all over our country. That's basically what will happen. Algae farming, if it takes off, will become one of those huge land consumers and water consumers.
What about hemp, Charles?
You know, a lot of people react very negatively when they hear the word hemp, but the fact is the hemp that they talk about is an industrial grade, and it contains little or no material known as THC in it. So it couldn't be used as a drug, and there's a very positive side to that. Many years ago, during the end of World War II, hemp was one of our major fiber producers in this country. Cotton was completely taken over by the war effort, and we needed all of the material that cotton could produce for fabrics, for everything. And hemp became the leading producer of fabric in this country. Well, at the end of the war, basically there was a huge cotton lobby that made hemp illegal, and it's very, well, you can't even grow hemp in this country anymore. Now, hemp is a wonderful source of material for such products as papers and fabrics and even foods. The seed is used as a cereal, and so the plant itself is actually very effective at growing a huge amount of material. It can be used to produce fabrics and foods and oil, you know, for cooking, for instance. But because it's illegal in this country, it isn't done. I was in Cameroon a little over a year and a half ago, working with the government there on a project to get hemp legalized as an industrial product, not as a drug. And we made a great deal of progress. At this point, it looks like they're poised to make it legal to grow, and then they would have a huge source of economic income. And again, make no mistake, this is not the drug. It's the product used to produce rope and fabric and paper.
I was in a hemp mobile in St. Louis years ago. We did a story on it. Fella came up. He had the whole thing fueled with hemp. And I'm telling you, it worked. The trouble is it cost a lot of money to make a gallon.
Oh, yes. It's incredibly expensive at this point. It isn't until there's an infrastructure in place, like 5,000 people, you know, farming it, that it becomes economically feasible. But we could see that in the very near future. It looks like things are starting to turn around.
Well, that's good news. How about you? New and exciting projects on your plate, Charles?
Well, I've got a new laboratory set up in South Carolina here. I've taken over part of a building that was used for manufacturing automobile parts, and so that's looking very good. And we're giving solar demonstrations for some of the technologies we've developed. And that brings me to another thing. One of the projects I'm working on is to give away some of the technologies I've developed, and I need to be contacted by people who are seriously interested in producing this stuff. I'm going to have some more material on my website about that very shortly, but we ran afoul of trying to get some things done through traditional channels, and there's a lot of opposition to new technologies and new sources of energy. New energy companies are, you know, one of the most highly sued companies that there are in this country.
Really? Why?
And, well, you know, a lot of people work in collaboration with groups, and the groups turn around when they break free and think that they're stepping on their toes or using something they've developed together and they have a right to it, and it turns into a lawsuit in many cases. You have to be very careful. So it turns out that energy is one of those big money makers, and anybody who feels that there's a dollar to be made, they want to have their foot in the water. So it turns into you know, high tech and energy, and those two companies, high tech startups and energy startups, are the ones that get sued the most. So there's a lot of slowdown in the development of alternative energy because of that. The other issue is we have all the alternative energy we could ever need and ever want, but the cost of it is out of reach of the common person. I guess the assumption was by many companies that there would be government grants and subsidies to back up the costs. Well, the only issue is it's driven the cost of it out of range for many people, because if you don't install it on, let's say, your house, for instance, you don't get the tax breaks in many cases. So we have a lot of things going on in developing new technologies. The other thing we're doing, and I think this is very exciting, we're trying to get ozonators, and I've developed a very efficient generator of ozone for sterilizing drinking water. We're trying to get ozonators in third world countries where there is a real shortage of drinking water. So we're starting an effort right now to try and find the means of placing 1 million ozonators in third world countries.